You know you make me wanna shout. Look, my head's jumping. Look, my heart's thumping. Throw my head back. Come on now. Don't forget to say you will. Yeah, don't forget to shout. Yeah.
Say you will.
Pull your head back, baby.
Say you will.
Come on.
Say you will.
Pull your head back. Ooh.
Darling, I only listen to Radio Gorgeous.
I'm Nikki Kidner, and I'm thrilled to be joined today by two wonderful actresses, Rhiannon Vivian and Ginny Lyons. Both of these incredibly talented women took One Woman shows up to Edinburgh last year for the festival. I wanted to find out a little bit more about what kind of person it takes to do a One Woman show. Ginny, let me start with you. What was it called?
Well, that's the easy part. The show is called Ginny Lyons is an Only Child, because I am one, and I was interested in seeing what could be done with improvised theatre. It was something I wanted to do, and it was something I'd had a taste of just during a warm-up session, I think, or a rehearsal, just to try improvising on my own, and I just loved it. And it scared me as well. So that was the good combination of terror and joy, I think, being the mix together.
And that adrenaline went, yes, yeah, I'm going to do it for myself.
Yeah, exactly that. Partly just to see if I could. I remember my first ever show, and my sole aim was just like, do I enjoy this? That was my aim for my 15 minutes on stage, and I came off like, yep, that was great. Terrifying, but really, really fun. Cool, I'm going to carry on.
And Rhi, how did your show come about, and what was it called?
My show was called Doors to Manual, and that came about from me deciding that I should do a one-person show, because I had a lot of ideas and I really enjoyed doing characters, because my background is improvisation. I just thought, what, I really should do this one thing, because I don't want to have died and not done it. That was the main reason.
So there's a little bit more to the developmental side of this production, because it actually came out of a phobia.
Yes. So I knew I wanted to do a one-person show and a character show, but I didn't know how to hook it or what to do. And it was my mum that said, oh, you've got a blog about flying. And because I used to be terrified of flying, found an online fear of flying tutorial, which gradually helped me not be scared of flying. And I just became really fascinated by everything to do with flight. And I don't mean just kind of ghoulishly fascinated when shit goes wrong, but just everything to do with it, because it's quite magnificent. So it was figuring out how to kind of hook it around flying. So then I put the characters on a plane, and that's fun anyway, because who doesn't like, even when you're doing improvisation, who doesn't like being in a scene that's in a car or on a plane? There's something about being in captivity that gets the best out of characters, because you can't go anywhere.
Yeah, there's not an option to just leave the stage. If you're on a plane, you're on a plane.
Yeah.
So your phobia turned into an obsession. And that fascination stimulated this idea.
Yes, I would say. That's something I talk about in the show, because it's characters and me talking as myself about my journey, just because hopefully it's interesting when you talk about something that people might have common ground with. And I thought, even if you're scared of flying, or if you love flying, hopefully you'll have a takeaway from it, because you'll like it for different reasons. Yeah, so I think when you strip fear away, it's often replaced with fascination. And I think the fascination might be there already anyway, but you're so scared you can't see it. So it's giving that an opportunity to kind of grow and be like, oh, wow, I never knew I was interested in this. And then, of course, as with anything new like that, you feel like you're the first person ever who's found out these things and you want to tell everyone. And that's how I felt. And also I thought, I didn't think I would ever become unscared of flying. And I think that's quite a nice thing to put out into the world and say, you can be really scared of something and you can definitely get past it. I'm not preaching remotely, and I'm not saying that watching my show would do that for you, but I like that the thought that you can come away from a show and think, yeah, I'm scared of pigeons, so I'm gonna get on that.
I'm gonna get on a pigeon.
I'm gonna get on that thing and fly it away.
That's so crazy. I feel like that's a whole other podcast. I could talk all day long about phobias, how that affects people. Both of you had very different productions to go with. Rhiannon's was scripted and Ginny, yours was improvised.
Yeah.
Do you have favourites?
I do, actually. I did a cracking one up in Edinburgh. My favourite ones are always the ones where I haven't noticed the audience for a while. I've just been so involved with the people on stage. And for me, it is very odd. I do, even though I know full well it's only me up there, when I'm up there and I'm improvising multiple characters in a scene, I'm convinced that they're there. So I do feel that there's more than one person up there with me, even though it is just me. And what's really fun afterwards is talking to people, and they go, oh yeah, and then she said this and he said that, and I couldn't believe it when she did this. And they see me as two separate people as well, which is really cool. So it's those the favourite ones are probably ones where I haven't noticed the audience for a while, and then some part of my, like an ear or something, just checks back in with them, and I can just feel their engagement. I can feel them leaning forward, and just like, oh, you just, when they have this, like one where they gasp because they can't believe that something's happened or that someone said something, those are really, oh, so satisfying. And it's because I've surprised myself as well. Like,
does that mean more to you than a laugh?
Yeah, I reckon it does. There's a really, really delicious silence that happens sometimes, and it just feels like liquid velvet just sort of spreading out over the room and onto the stage, like some really cool dry ice.
As a performer myself as well, when you do live performances, there's a huge difference between active listening, which you just feel, and it's a stillness that you don't get if the audience is just quiet and bored.
Yeah, oh God, yeah, that's the worst.
Radio Gorgeous, gorgeous lives.
So as improvisers and comedians, a lot of people must say to you regularly how brave you are to get up and do that. How do you feel about that statement?
I find it a really odd one, because to me, that's not what bravery is. But because I feel like bravery is something where you're risking something, you know, you're risking your life or safety. I suppose for some people who are terrified of public speaking or terrified of getting up on stage in front of people, for them, it is really brave. For me, it's a, like, yeah, I get to do the really cool thing I love. But yeah, I can see why for some people they might be like, that's the last thing on earth I want to do. Maybe for me it would be like, yeah, you're really brave, dunking your feet in that tank of piranhas. And the aquarium guy's like, no, do it every day, it's cool.
Yeah, I think similarly, brave is a strange old word, because people say about so many different things. Overcoming or not overcoming an illness, not something you can control. So, you know, that's not really a choice. Performance? Probably not. I don't know. Yeah.
It is really interesting because you're getting up on stage without a script. You don't know what's going to happen next. There's a lot of courage there to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe courage over bravery. Yeah. When I hear brave, I hear of, someone like the, what are they, RNL? Fishing rescue
Royal
people.
Royal Lifeboat people.
The fishing rescue people. The people who rescue fish from Downing. They're brave. it's not that it's not scary. With improv, it's mostly just excitement. But my solo show, definitely, I was scared beforehand. But I think to not be scared beforehand would have been so freaky, I would have been scared of not being scared.
Yeah, I think being scared shows you care about it. For me, it's all about the audience, like whether the audience are having a good time. And just the thought that they wouldn't have a good time is awful.
So there's a nerves rather than a fear
about
exactly. It all.
Yeah.
What kind of impact does a hobby that is clearly this important to both of you have on your work-life balance?
I personally just need more time, and you can feel like you're doing both things a bit well. And what I really want to do is to have enough energy and enough time to do my real life well. I will always be writing, and one can help fuel the other. I definitely see the difference. I saw the difference in my writing from doing improv and vice versa.
So you guys socialise with a lot of performers, see a lot of performances at Edinburgh. What would you say about the psychology of somebody who wants to go put themselves on the stage and make people laugh?
Do it, because there's something in you that wants to do it. So there's no point in lying to yourself. I read a really brilliant article, and I don't know who the dude is. The title of it was something like, stop searching for what you're passionate about, you already know.
Oh, I saw that one.
And the whole read is very irreverent, and he's quite sweary. But I really liked it, because at its core, it's basically saying that a lot of what we do or don't do is based on fear. And I think a lot of the reason people maybe won't do it or quash it is they're scared. They're like, oh, what if people think I'm a show-off? Or what if I'm not actually funny? You could have a whole list of what-ifs, but if right at the root of that is you really wanting to do it, then you should do it.
Also, you're going to have to go from being on your sofa in your slippers to, boom, next night, down at the Comedy Store doing an hour-long slot. You know, you could do a course, do an improv course or a stand-up course and explore how it feels.
First bunch of improv I did, I remember thinking, I could never do a show. I want to, but I couldn't. And my reasons were like, I don't know, I'm not good enough, I'm not ready. But I genuinely thought, can I pull this out of my bum? Can I do it? So yeah, you're never ready, so do it.
It's a bit like what everybody says about becoming first-time parents. And yeah. You guys birthed your shows and it was all successful and you grow with it and you make the changes you have to make to accommodate
it. Yeah, it's way easier than kids. It's probably just as expensive.
Yeah.
But you've got a bit more control.
It's massively more... Is it more selfish? I'm not sure. Yeah, the first four shows I think I did of my Edinburgh show, I felt so terrified. I felt like I almost went a little bit kind of deaf and like I couldn't quite figure out where I was. But I had such nice things said on the way out that it was kind of like I felt a little bit like the Ready Breck advert where it glows.
Yeah,
I'm not just like, well done, good show, but people saying things like, there was that bit when, or I really nearly cried then. And it's really cool. It's like, oh, you want to share things with me because something's affected you and it's different every time. And that makes it feel worthwhile. Like, I guess like those moments when your kids smile at you for the first time, I suppose.
It's like when your show smiles at you.
When your show, when your audience, when your baby audience smile at you.
My weekday fix. Darling, it has to be Radio Gorgeous.
You guys must have had an awful lot of fun while you were in Edinburgh. Have you got any anecdotes that we just have to hear today?
Before I went up to Edinburgh, I had a bit of a not so great time. I felt like I would barely be able to get through my first show. And when the audience started filtering in, I thought I was going to cry. Because I genuinely was so happy that people would come and see me. I was like, wow. And then I watched the room fill up and I was like, oh, crap, I'm going to fill up. And then I thought, no, get it together. And there was just a moment where I just cut. Well, there's no choice. So I think for me, just getting through that first one, it's not a favourite moment, but definitely more of a personal achievement moment.
Just you saying about having people come in as well. I found out after doing Edinburgh that do you know what the average Edinburgh audience is?
Four?
Five. You were close. Mm. So I know
the average show in Edinburgh,
yeah,
the medium audience is five people.
Yeah.
So I was really chuffed afterwards, and I was pretty sure you must have done this as well, but I totted up all my audience numbers and my smallest number was 10. I was like, yeah, I've totally beat the system. So that was delightful. But I had a really nice day. And again, like I said, I was broke. I went into this square and there was one donut left at the coffee stand, but it was a bit squashed. And I said to the guy, I was like, oh, you know, I'll have that donut as well. And, you know, it's a bit squashed. Can I get some money off? And he just gave it to me for free. So I got a free donut.
Ace.
So I know these things I'm
you
saying.
You were a winner that night.
Yeah, I totally was. I think the things to keep you sane during Edinburgh are the tiny things like that.
People being nice.
Yeah. Duty, yeah. Mm. My parents came to see me four times.
Oh.
They could have been to see anyone else because it's the same show every time. It's not like an improv that it could be anything. It was so nice and so supportive. And those four times, I had slightly dodgy doors that wouldn't stick closed. It took a bit of technique. But I was so spoiled in those four shows because my dad basically would stand there and try and get them closed and keep them closed. And if anyone came in late, he would get up and close them for me.
Oh.
And that was such a lovely gesture. But yeah, it's tiny little things. And I didn't really want to go out late and I didn't have any spare cash either, so
it's interesting what you say about food and those just little wins that can keep you moving forward. I was in Edinburgh one year for the festival. I watched a show by a guy, first name surnames, Pursuit of Happiness. He'd done a survey with 200 people that he knew to find out what made us happy. He looked at relationships and love and friendships and safety and health, everything. And it took an hour for him to get to this point to go, it's food. That's it. Sharing food with people, eating food, making food for people, the taste and the experience of nice food in a lovely environment. He said all happiness just seemed to keep coming back and back and back like a boomerang to food. It was really sweet. It was the little things. It was somebody leaving a chocolate on your pillow, somebody just going, oh, I saw this and I know you like it. Or, you know, preparing a meal out of love.
Mm.
Or I knew you were veggie, so I didn't make a massive steak.
That's thoughtful. It's really it makes you feel special.
I do like the phrase, I want to take you to dinner. I think it's maybe been uttered to me once, but I like it.
It's nice.
More, please.
Yeah.
So if people want to hear more of your meanderings, it's at Comedy Food Girl.
Yes.
And your Twitter handle, Ri?
It's Rhiannon VV, and so that's RHIANNON and then two V's. Also, I have a website, and that's just rhiannonvivian.com. Twitter's probably better for finding out when shows are going to be, and the website is just some gratuitous... I was going to say pictures, but that sounds like they're going to be grubby, but they're not.
Both of you, thank you to the insight into the world of... comedy, improvisation and the Edinburgh Festival. I've been talking to Ginny Lyons and Rhiannon Vivian. I'm Nikki Kidner. Thanks for listening.
RadioGorgeous.com.
Well, you know you make me want to shout. Look, my hands jump up. Look, my heart's thumping. Throw my head back. Come on now. Don't forget to see you win. I feel, whoa!